All right, so let's start. Shalom Aleichem, first of all. Important thing. Okay, today we will explore just a few ideas, at least, regarding the idea of contemplating God. It is actually one of the main things in Judaism in general. People usually apply these ideas to Kabbalah, Hasides, or Hasidut, or whatever you want to call it, like the mystical part of the Torah. And the truth is, and that's one of my objectives in this presentation, is to show that this is not something that pertains only to the mystical part of the Torah. No. This is something Jewish. And there's a Jewish way of doing this. Of course, there's a non-Jewish way of doing this. I mean, against Judaism, I don't mean for non-Jews or Jews, whatever. These ideas that I'm going to share apply both for Jews and non-Jews. But there's a Jewish way of contemplating God, of understanding Him. So what I'm going to do is just to share a few ideas. This does not mean that these are the only ideas around. This is just a few ideas, some concepts that we can use to improve our relationship with God. Because after all, the main thing is our relationship with God. It can take different shapes in different times of life, in different people, according to the knowledge of the person, according to the characteristics of the person. It may vary. My relationship with God is personal. It's mine. And your relationship with God is personal also. It's yours. It has your imprint, so to speak, even though we are all supposed to fulfill basically the same commandments, the same orders from God, etc. Of course, Jews, 613 things, and non-Jews, 7, and different ramifications, etc. That's true. That's for everybody the same. However, our way of doing it, it's personal. It's ours. So let's start. First of all, I copied this from a dictionary, whatever the dictionary Google sent me to. Just what's the definition of contemplating? What does that mean? What does that mean? In other places, it's called meditation. But meditation has a whole, idolatric meaning to it, weird and strange meaning, even though meditation is a very common thing in Judaism. And basically, I'm just using this word, not because this is the main idea and the main word. I'm just using this word because I don't want to use meditation, even though it's not a bad word, but I don't want to confuse people. That's why I'm not using that word. But it could go also. It's the same idea, basically. Okay, what's meditation? What's contemplation, meditation, whatever? Look thoughtfully, this is, again, from the dictionary, look thoughtfully for a long time at whatever the thing is. You're contemplating whatever you're contemplating, a tree, whatever. Look thoughtfully. Think about something. Think deeply and at length at something. These three ideas, which basically look the same, capture something very important about the idea of us contemplating God. It's not enough, okay, I thought about God. There's a God? Yeah, there's a God. Okay, let's go. Move on. No, you didn't get it. You have to stop. You have to pause. You have to think and rethink and think deeply, like all the things that are, all the ideas that are over here. And that's why I wrote over here, down here, I'm not going to read the whole thing, forget it. I'm going to base myself a lot on the fact that you can read some sources by yourself. I'll point to you the sources. I'm just going to bring a few ideas that are over there in the sources, and the rest is your job. And in order to understand why I'm doing this, I'll explain something outside, so to speak, of this presentation, a very general idea that this pertains mainly to Hasidus, and not just to Hasidic thought, rather to Chabad Hasidus thought. Why? What am I talking about? There's a verse. The verse says in Hebrew, Tzadik be'emunasoy ichye. I'll translate. A tzaddik, a righteous person, lives with his faith. Like, faith is a very important thing in Judaism in general and then in the life of this tzaddik, of this righteous person. And there was a famous argument between the Alter Rebbe, the founder of Chabad Hasidism, and some other students of the Maggid of Mezrich, which was the second Hasidic master, after the Baal Shem Tov, the founder of Hasidus, etc., there was a famous discussion how to basically read this verse. You know, in Hebrew, we have letters, and under the letters, we put little dots that gives us an idea of how to read this word. Under the letters, there are dots. So, the same letters, if you change the dots, actually read differently, and not just that, they mean differently, and they can mean like an ocean of difference, infinite difference between one read and the other read, just because you changed the dots. I'll bring a very simple example, and then I'll give the idea of the argument between the students of the Maggid of Message, the Hasidic masters. Example first, the word Mitzrayim, I'm not writing it down, forget it, the word Mitzrayim means Egypt. Okay, the Jewish people left Egypt, you know, we're close to Pesach, etc., etc. Very nice. But if you take the same exact words, same exact letters, and you just change under the letters, the dots, you read Metzarim, which means limits. Ooh. So first of all, you can think about in a very simple way, the Jewish people left Egypt. It's a historical fact, it's a story, whatever, it's in the Bible, the Torah, whatever you want to call it. That's it. Bye-bye. Thousands of years ago. What's in there for me? Nothing, it's just a story. Very nice story. No. Comes Judaism and says, wait a second, if you take the same word and you just change a little bit the dots, you get a different word, Metzarim, which means limits, oppression. That means that coming out of Egypt doesn't mean just leaving the country there in Africa, Egypt. No. It means go over your own limitations. It means transcend yourself. But there's a whole different meaning over here. We're not just remembering something that happened thousands of years ago, which we're anyway obligated to do so, and we do it twice a day, and very nice. We're obligated to all the time leave our comfort zone and move on in life within ourselves. So the only thing we did was just to change a few dots under a word. So now let's go to this argument between the Alter Rebbe and other students. Shlomo de Karlin, whatever. There were other students. And the verse I brought before, Tzadik ve'emunasa ichye, a righteous person lives with his faith. The Hasidic masters, except the Alter Rebbe, they used to understand it in a different way. They used to say, Tzadik ve'emunasa yechaye. It's just changing a little dots under the word ichye, yechaye, means gives life. Ooh, a different meaning. A righteous person, when you have faith on him, he gives you life. What does that mean? It means that in certain Hasidic circles, when you actually, whatever, believe on the Rebbe or follow the ideas of the Rebbe, etc., the Rebbe is going to do all the work for you. He will do everything for you. He will lift you up. He will make you see godliness, and you are like the Rebbe. Amazing. Just because you are in the same table, in Yiddish it's called Tish, in the same table of the Rebbe, you're sitting there and you're enjoying the words of the Rebbe and the singing of the Rebbe and everything, the Rebbe takes you up, lifts you up. That's the way the students of the Maggid of Mezrich, mainly Shlomo de Karlin, they used to understand these words. Tzadik ve'munasoy yechaye. The righteous person, when you have faith on him, he will give you life. He will make you really sense godliness and Jewish, etc., etc. The Alter Rebbe used to say, no way. You have to do your own job. I'll give you the tools. I'll show you where, how, when, etc., etc. But the work, you do it yourself. What's the difference? Basically, the difference is that when the Rebbe takes you and just lifts you up, you continue being the same animal you were before, the same coarse person you were before, just the Rebbe lifts you up. Oh, you're a lifted animal. Very nice. But you continue being the same thing. Nothing changed on you. And as soon as the Rebbe just, for whatever reason, is not lifting you up,
forget it. You go back to being such a terrible, coarse person.
In the Chabad way, it's the other way around. The Rebbe, again, gives you the tools. You work on yourself. You change yourself. You become a different person because of the tools you used that the Rebbe gave you, and that changed person is never going back to whatever you were before. No, because you changed already. you're a different person. That's why in Chabad, again, the custom is, I'll give you the tools, I'll show you where, I'll show you how to, and you do your job. You do your part. I'm just going to show you where. Okay, so what about contemplation? Again, let's move on. It's not about amount of time. It's not that you have to contemplate and think and meditate, whatever the word you want to use, for 3 hours. And if you don't do it for 3 hours, forget it. Nothing is going to happen. No. It doesn't work like that. And moreover, if a person is not accustomed to this, you're not going to be able to concentrate yourself for 3 hours in one concept. Forget it. It's not so easy. So start small in amount. Small. Start by taking your watch, your clock, whatever, and separate 15 seconds. Seriously, 15 seconds, and focus, concentrate on one idea for 15 seconds, the greatness of God. We're going to read about this later, learn about this later. Greatness of God. Just one idea, 15 seconds. When 15 seconds are over, beep, 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 that's it. Go do something else. Next time, next week or whatever, you feel comfortable with 15 seconds, go up to 20. 20 seconds now. And think about one idea. No other thoughts can go into your mind. And if other thoughts go into your mind, just move them away. No, I'm thinking about this now. 20 seconds. And so on. And you move on. And there's no objective over here, like a limit. Yeah, once I reach 1 hour, it's okay. Who has an hour every day or whatever time you want to have? Every single day, 1 hour thinking about, yeah, I don't have the time. I'm sorry. But the point is, when you're accustomed to think and to contemplate on concepts and ideas, and you really do it with concentration, etc., then with time, with a little bit of time, amount of time, you start thinking about this, you're going to have the same effect. As if you were thinking for 3 hours. Why? Because in a different time, you took the time, you separated the time, and you really concentrated on this for a certain amount of time. You got accustomed to that. And then when you just start, you got it. You're there already, quickly. So it's not about amount of time. Contemplation, it doesn't require such a long amount of time. It requires concentration. And it's not about different ideas. You're not required to think every single day and every single time on a different thing. You can think the same thing 2,000 times. Doesn't make any difference. Greatness of God. God creates all the trees. And the trees have leaves. And the leaves are green. And it's a beautiful green. And I hear the leaves doing on the wind. And I see them move. Okay, you got it. You contemplate it on the leaves of a tree. And next time, again, you can go back to the tree. What's the problem? You want the sea. You like the sea. And you see the waves of the sea. Okay. Concentrate on the sea. It doesn't really matter the fact that what you're concentrating on. Of course, all of this is to understand the greatness of God. God is the creator of all the leaves, of all the trees, of all the whole world. And God is the creator of all the drops of water, of all the oceans, of all the whole world. Okay? So he's a great guy. He's a great creator, so to speak. Okay. When should you do this? Whatever we're going to learn. When should you do this? Okay. I brought two sources. One of them is kind of small. I'll tell you where to find them. Very easy sources. The first one is the Shulchan Aruch, the Code of Jewish Law, or Chaim 98, whatever. It says before prayer, you should actually think, contemplate, meditate, whatever, about the greatness of God and the lowliness of man. This is a regular moment, a good moment to think about God. You're going to pray to Him. You're going to present yourself in front of Him. So you better think about Him, at least a little bit before. Just as if you were preparing to present yourself in front of any king, you would actually get ready and get ready your clothes and present yourself properly and review a few times what you're going to say, etc. The same thing happens with God. He is the king of all the kings, etc., etc. And the second source, I'm sorry that the letters are kind of small, it's from the Rambam. The Rambam, Maimonides brings in his laws of the fundamentals of Torah, that the only way a person can actually reach love of God and fear of God, parenthesis, Bnei Noach are not obligated to love God. They can do it, but not obligated, but they are obligated to fear God. The only way to reach these two commandments, mitzvahs, is contemplating. The Rambam uses exactly this word. When a person contemplates his, God's wondrous and great deeds, etc., etc. So, this idea of contemplating, it's not, again, I repeat, a Hasidic thing or a mystical thing. Wait a second. Shulchan Aruch, Code of Jewish Law, is not a mystical book, and the Rambam is not a mystical book. It's a regular Jewish thing to contemplate, to concentrate yourself in understanding the greatness of God as far as you can understand, and that's going to create within yourself or reveal, develop, whatever, within yourself, love for God and fear for God. Okay, that's about what's contemplating. Now, the next two slides are going to be just a summary of a very interesting part of a very interesting book. The book is Duties of the Heart, Choyves Alevavos, that's what it's called in Hebrew, Choyves Alevavos, Shaar Abechina, that's what it's called in Hebrew, this part, Portal of Contemplation. It's like 10 portals, different things, different subjects in Jewish thought, etc. This particular part talks about contemplating God. And it's very methodic. I really... I'm expecting, as I explained before, that you actually go and read the source. It's not such a long thing. No. And it's not a difficult thing in English. It's a different style. It's like very ancient style. So sometimes it repeats things, whatever they are. It's not such a difficult book at all. You can find it in Sepharia. Just look for thought, Jewish thought or something like that. Machshava, that's what they call it, this category. Duties of the Heart. Look at it in Google if you're going to find it. And I think it's the second, portal. He talks about contemplating God. First of all, he talks about why people don't contemplate God. And you know what? This book was written year around 1300s, Spain 1300s. We're talking about a long time ago. Okay, but you know what? Whatever he says applies 100% to today. People don't contemplate on God because they're so much into worldly things, into their own passions, into physical things. They don't even realize that God is doing with them so much kindness and so much good things, so many good things to him, towards him, etc. They don't spend the time to contemplate on God. They don't even realize. We see the sun coming out every single morning. We don't think it's God moving the sun. It's just the sun coming out. Who's God? Who's talking about God? Which is actually the question that Pharaoh, the king of Egypt, asked Moshe Rabbeinu. Lo yadaiti Hashem. I don't know what you're talking about. God? What do you mean, God? There's no such a thing. I'm God. That's what he thought, actually. So why don't people contemplate? Because they're too much into worldly things. We're too coarse. So first step into starting to contemplate, to meditate on God, etc. First step is start leaving a little bit the physical world. Doesn't mean go to the mountains. No. It doesn't mean that. It means don't be so much like, in other words, what's the pleasure in your life? Is it eating a good piece of cake or God? That's the question. So if your answer is good in eating a good piece of cake, okay, start leaving a little bit the cake, start focusing your life in different things, and start thinking about God. That's going to allow you, actually leaving the cake, is going to allow you to think about God. If we don't do it, it's very tough. What kind of human being are you? In fact, are you a human being? If you don't contemplate, you're not a human being. That's what it says, basically. And there's a story, that's why I wrote this question. It's not from the Duties of the Heart, that's from Hasides. There's a story, very short thing. When a person walks in the street, if a person is not thinking about God, is not thinking words of Torah, the stones that a person steps on have a question. Why do you step on me? I'm a stone. I keep whatever God told me to do. I'm like not moving in this place, etc. And I'm doing everything properly. But you are a human being. You have a mind. You have a seichel, a cup, we say in Hebrew, in English, in Yiddish. You have a head on top of your shoulders. hopefully there's a gray matter on top of the head, on inside the head, on top of your shoulders. Why don't you use it to think about God? Why don't you just use it to think about food, money, and so on? So the stone has a big problem. You're not better than me. Why should you step on me? I'm doing my mission. You're not. So taking it into the words, so to speak, of the duties of the heart. Again, this came from Hasidus. Let's go back to the duties of the heart. If you're not using your powers to serve God, so you're not even living like a human being. You're just another animal going around, just like a whatever. The stone is not expecting a dog to think about God. Just a dog, whatever, steps on the stone and it's okay. Stone is doing its job and the dog is doing its job. But you're a human being. Are you doing your job? That's the question that anybody should ask himself, herself, why even walking in the street. Like, why are you stepping on the street? With what rights? Okay, that's about, should you contemplate? Of course. That's what you came here for. Not just contemplate, of course, to fulfill the commandments of God. Yeah. But this is part of being conscious of God. And this is going to help you, as we learned before from the Rambam, to develop God, love for God, fear for God, and that's going to help you to actually fulfill the commandments you're supposed to do. Otherwise, it's pretty difficult. Okay, what should you contemplate? He has a very long thing on this. First, the summary that he himself brings, a very short summary. And then he explains in more detail, and I'm going to read a few parts of it for you, just a few parts. I put over here in this presentation two psukim, two verses from Psalms, from Isaiah. Look around you. And if you look around you, you will have enough material for contemplation. So this is basically what the duties of the heart is saying. Look at the movement of the earth. Look at the sun. Look at the moon. Look at the body, your body, how it functions. I'm not arguing. I'm not discussing whether you're a healthy person or not. Okay, some people are not healthy. God should give health to everybody. But the point is that the body of man, if a person is healthy, works perfectly. It's an interesting, very interesting machine, as we're going to learn in a few minutes. Look at the animals. Look at the plants around you. Look at the different jobs that people have. So they discover the idea of fire. They discover the idea of doing this, doing that, etc. Even artificial intelligence, whatever. We made it. Okay, whatever you want to take. Hey, man is pretty smart, you know? Interesting. Look at the Torah. The Torah also, it's a place where you can contemplate the wisdom and the greatness of God. So these are, again, summary of the things a person could think about. To contemplate the greatness and the kindness of God with his creation, with each one of us. Let's move on a little bit deeper, so to speak. This is based, I read it over here, in the fifth chapter. Go read it. It's so interesting. I don't have the time to read it, the whole thing for you. So I'm just going to read a few things, just a few parts. First of all, let's look at the beginning of a person. How a person grows, and how a person is born, etc., etc. First of all, God put man, woman, whatever, in the womb of a woman, of his mother, her mother, etc. And over there, he's protected. It's very, very weak. Any movement, anything wrong can very easily destroy the fetus inside the womb of a mom. So it's protected over there, has the food it needs without any effort. Nothing is expected from this creature, so to speak. Just grow. Just be. And we're going to give you everything. That's how we start, so to speak, life. And then we're born. And it has a whole long discussion. Nobody knows really when we are born. Then you can see clearly that God is the only one over here deciding what's going on with this person. And also the same thing applies to actually your creation. Some people try to have children for years and years and they can't, and they do everything fine. And some people, you know, they're just children full of themselves, and we don't know why and how, etc. God is the only one managing his world, you know. He's the only one that really knows heat times and etc. So, again, he has a whole discussion over there regarding this particular thing. Then when the person is born, you have your food ready in your mother, within your mother, and she has pleasure in giving this food for you, and you have pleasure in giving your food and eating from her. So everything basically works without any effort. And the mother gives enough food, not much, not little, not more than necessary, not less than necessary, etc. Of course, I'm talking about a regular, healthy person, etc., etc. There are cases and there are difficulties. Okay, I know that. I'm conscious of that. I have 10 children, so I know what I'm talking about. But I never gave my children food, okay? That's my wife's job. But whatever, I know what I'm talking about. I know the subject, so to speak. So imagine that this baby actually, the only thing that it does is just to cry, eat, and, you know, do necessities and sleep. But still, the parents love this child so much, and even though they don't have any benefit of actually tending to this child, taking care of this child, etc., they still love it. So we see certain ideas of the kindness of God. Now we're, so to speak, contemplating the kindness of God, not the greatness of God, but the kindness of God to the men, to men. Then he talks about a very interesting fact. A child, a baby, doesn't really realize what's good or bad, doesn't even have shame at all. Imagine a grown-up, God forbid, a grown-up, goes around the street and suddenly necessities just come out. You say, oy vey, I'm wet, oy vey, I'm so dirty, I want to go home, I don't want to be here. That doesn't happen if a person is healthy. But for a baby, it does happen all the time. So you have to change the diaper. But he doesn't have any shame. What would happen if the baby would really understand what's going on with his body? It would be terrible all the time. I can't hold it. I'm sorry. Now, baby doesn't realize what's going on. Same thing happens when a baby starts growing a little bit, starts understanding who he is, what is his body. And then he brings a whole very interesting idea of our memory and actually forgiveness, forgetfulness, I'm sorry. And all these things that I've spoken for, shame, and he talks about free will, intellect. When a person starts growing, you realize certain things you just forget. And certain things you don't forget. Why? Again, that's the kindness of God towards his creation, that certain things you forget. Do you remember all the times that you actually made mistakes throughout your whole life? No, probably not. You just remember a few times, okay? This time, that time, and you regret them, etc., etc. Okay, that's part of the creation. But if we had to remember all the single times that we made mistakes, we'll be terrible life. Same thing happens, and he brings the idea, but in a different way. If we had to remember the pain of our dear people that passed away throughout all history of humanity, it would be impossible to live. Imagine in 5,000 years, how many people passed away that were your ancestors and passed. It would be impossible to live if we had to remember everything. So God, what does he do? He makes us forget. Literally, we just forget. We forget the pain, we forget the sorrow, etc., of our past living people that they're not here anymore. So this is part of the kindness of God. And then he says that people start growing, and God, so to speak, gives to a person discernment between good and bad, speech, writing, and he has a whole thing, go and read it, about writing, how great this is and how interesting it is, and the intellect, how it works. And then he finishes basically talking about how we actually can understand God through our minds. And this is the greatest kindness of God towards man. Because who told you that we, as limited human beings, limited minds, it doesn't matter whether you're more smarter or not smarter, whatever, it doesn't really matter. You're anyway limited. So who told you actually God is something that makes sense for us? And we're actually able to talk about God and to talk to him, to pray to him and to praise him or whatever the case is. Who told you that's so obvious? It is not. It's part of the kindness of God that He reveals to us through His creation. And we can understand His kindness. We can understand His greatness that He created, as I explained before, about the leaves of the trees or whatever you want to think about. All of this is part of the kindness of God towards us that we can actually think about Him, contemplate Him. And again, going back a little bit, if you don't use this kindness of God, you're actually, so to speak, disrespecting God. Something you created, a power, a capacity that you gave me, I'm not going to use it. Get out of here. I don't want it. What do you mean you want it? Something God gave you, you don't want it? It doesn't really sound so nice. So let's move on. A little bit deeper, within these same subjects that we spoke about before, contemplating, etc., etc., Hasidic thought talks about, explains, based on Kabbalah, whatever, mysticism, how the mind of a human being actually works. And this is based, actually, in how God created the whole world. I'm not going to go into all the details about this, but basically, how does the mind of a human being work? So Hasidus, again, based on mysticism, Kabbalah, talks about three different qualities, capacities in the mind of a person. First of all comes Chochmah, wisdom. I didn't write it in Hebrew on purpose. On the bottom, I wrote a word in Hebrew. I'm going to read it in a few minutes. So what's wisdom? What's Chochmah? Wisdom doesn't mean how many things a person has. Like, this is a very wise doctor. This is a very wise architect. No. Wisdom is a different thing. The idea of wisdom is the main point, the core, so to speak, of an idea. Like when a person says, I want to build a house. Okay, so you see the house in your mind. You know what kind of house you want it. And then you go talk to the architect. And you tell him, I want to build a house. So the guy looks at you and says, okay, very nice. Suppose you have the money, whatever. So what do you want? I see my house. The architect doesn't read minds. You're going to have to talk about your house. What's your house? What do you want? How many rooms? How many stores? What's the material? That's already called Bina, understanding. That means this core idea that you have in your mind, you know the house you want, that has to be detailed. And there are so many details, and the deepness of each detail, like details of a house, okay, the roof and the floor, two details. Okay, the roof, how high, what material, what do you want to put on top of the roof or not, etc. And the floor, okay, the floor, what color, what material, etc. So there are many details, and there are many, many details to each detail. That's called Bina. That's called understanding. And then, that's another part of the brain, so to speak, comes Das. Das means knowledge. That's the way people translate knowledge. But what does it mean, knowledge? Knowledge is not how many things you know. Knowledge is how connected are you to this idea. How much this idea is yours, and you make it yours in order to really go and do it. The more connected you will be to your idea, the more probability that you're going to actually do it, and that's going to develop within yourself. If you pay attention, interestingly, when the Torah talks about, in Bereishis, in the beginning of the Torah, when the Torah talks about how men and women, they got together and they had a son, what does the Torah say? The Torah says, "V'ha'adam yada es Chava." And men knew Chava. Adam knew Chava. So you can easily say, yeah, you know, Torah doesn't want to say anything dirty, so it says he knew, but whatever, something else happened over there. Yeah, no. You got it wrong. Torah is being very, very precise. Torah doesn't have a problem saying promiscuity or whatever word you want to use. Torah is being very precise. Torah is saying they got actually connected. If there's no connection between them, what's going on? Animals also do this, and they don't connect. After they finish, they say bye-bye. They don't care. A few animals, some have some kind of relationship, but After some time, they just separate. They don't really care. They don't even recognize, you know, oh yeah, I was with you maybe 2 years ago. I don't really care. No, we don't work like that. Man works with connection. Men and women, that's what I mean. Work with connection. This is called Da'as. This is called knowledge in general, but means connect to the idea and make it yours. only through going through all these steps is that really the greatness of God, the whatever you're thinking about, the kindness of God, is going to have an effect in your life. If you don't go through all these steps, it's very difficult. Sometimes we do go through these steps and it's very fast because we're so used to this that we don't really realize what's going on. But if you start thinking a little bit, what's going on in your mind, this is basically the process through which we think everything, and after thinking, we actually go and do something about it. That's called das. Now, contemplation itself, the most important part, so to speak, in Hebrew is called isboinenus, itbonenut. I wrote it in Hebrew on purpose, because inside of this word, you could find the word bina, beis nun, bina, understanding. The more details you can actually think about a certain particular idea, the clearer you're going to have it and the more effect it's going to have in your life. If you just think in a way of chokhmah, what's chokhmah? God is great. That's chokhmah. The greatness of God. Yeah, he's so great. Okay, how great is he? Okay, he's great because he creates animals. Okay, how many animals? Oh, there are so many types of animals. Dogs and cats. Really? Just dogs and cats? No, also horses. Is there anything else? If you really start enumerating, okay, I'm not going to do it, of course, the number of animals around the world, you're going to say, wow, really? A lot? Yeah. God is great because he creates human beings. Really? How many human beings? Oh, I don't know, a lot. No. Start thinking. And you know what? Not just human beings, all the members of all the human beings, and not just the members, all the cells of all the members of all the human beings, not just the cells, the different parts of the cells, and the cells are composed of molecules, and the molecules are with atoms, and the atoms are with sub-atom molecules, not molecules, I'm sorry, particles or whatever you want to call it. Okay, so start really going deep and deep and deep until you're going to say, yeah, he creates atoms, and there's a lot of them, really, going around, moving and doing things, etc., etc. So the more detail you can go and you can bring to the ideas that you're thinking, the more effect it's going to have in your mind, in your heart also. I'm not touching into this subject because it's a long subject. The mind actually influences the heart to feel, and actually we brought it from the Rambam, I'm going back. The Rambam, this is what he was talking about. If you contemplate in God, you will love him. If you reflect on him, you will have awe and fear. So this is what the Rambam is saying. The mind actually influences the heart to have feelings of different types. But the point I wanted to bring over here is to understand the way the mind works and the way we can actually contemplate on any subject in general and in particular with God. How he does whatever he wants to do. Now, let's bring just one simple example. I'll explain this in a second. So I'll leave it over there for you to read if you want, so I don't have to read it. But I'll give just this one simple example of the greatness of God. Before we were talking about, in a Hasidic way, the greatness of God. Before we were talking about the kindness of God, the way duties of the heart talks about the kindness of God. Meditate on the creation around you, and you will see, meditate on your own body, and you will see the kindness of God. It's amazing. But what about the greatness of God? The Rambam before was talking about the greatness of God. One idea, just one idea. The Torah says that God created the world. And there's a phrase in the Talmud, very simple phrase, "Hagedula zumaisa breishis." The greatness of God is the creation. Okay, so you can meditate on the creation, you can contemplate the creation, again, with details, as I explained before, I'm not going to repeat now, and you will understand, at least to a certain degree, the greatness of God. Very good. But then there's another phrase of our sages. Our sages say, "B'makom gidulosei shamatam moitzam v'sanuso." In the place where you see the greatness of God, there you find the humility of God. Humbleness of God. What does that mean? That which for us is called the greatness of God, for instance, he created the earth He created the moon, he created the sun and all the stars, and there are thousands and thousands of stars around the world with planets going around them. Okay, you can like fly, so to speak, in your mind. What is the creation and the size, so to speak, of the creation of God that the scientists are still trying to look for it? After all that, that's only humbleness of God. That's only the humbleness of God. Why? Because the verse says that God created, our sages explained the verse, saying that God created the whole physical world with just one letter, the letter Hey. The verse says, Ki ve-yud kei avai yetzur elamim. With the Yud and the Hey, two letters, God created, formed the worlds. So our sages say, with the letter Yud, God created the world to come. With the letter Hey, God created this particular world. Now, let's put everything together. You're saying that the greatness of God is the creation. The more details and the more you meditate and contemplate on the creation, you will understand better the greatness of God. But that which we call the greatness of God is just the humbleness of God. Because for him, it's just the letter Hey. Not more than that. That which for us is amazingly incredible, we still don't find its limit, for him is just pronouncing one letter. Imagine you invite in a conference, whatever, some prize, Nobel Prize of Physics, whatever, and they are over there, physics, and everybody is so smart and so great, and they're all waiting for this amazing speech about the new things that physics, whatever. And the guy stands in the stage, whatever, and he says, good morning. And everybody starts clapping, yes, great, amazing, incredible, such a wisdom. Wait a second, I just said good morning. Is that what you think it's my wisdom? Just saying good morning? That's all? I can say a lot more than that. And I can give you such deep ideas and thoughts about physicism, whatever, I'm the Nobel Prize, blah, blah, blah. But I just said good morning, and that's what you think it's my greatness? You're actually insulting me. Because by thinking that my good morning, my salute, whatever, good morning, that's already greatness, that's my greatness. What do you mean? You don't know who am I? Who I am? The same thing happens with God. If we think that the greatness of God is just the creation of this world, and lots of people call the God the creator, yeah, very nice. Is that the greatness of God? For him, it took just one letter, letter Hey. It's just one small letter. With that small letter, he created the whole world that we're so excited about. So this is just one example of how we can actually take these ideas a little bit deeper and higher and higher. First of all, now let's go to this slide and hopefully we'll understand it a little bit better. First of all, we were thinking the whole presentation I spoke about how God fills the world. The trees and the moon and the planets and everything you can think about. And the kindness of God with the body, the human body, etc. Everything is how God actually shows us this creation that he made for us. And that shows his greatness, his kindness, and so many other things. Very nice. But that's just the creation. That doesn't really talk about God. It's just like saying that the great scientist is a great scientist because he knows how to say hello, good morning. No, that doesn't show really what he's able to do. So therefore, there's another second part. There's another way of understanding godliness. How God transcends all of this that we see around. And not just the fact that God transcends all of things, but in some way, he's both at the same time. He is within the world. He creates the world. That shows on his greatness also. But at the same time, he transcends the world. He's beyond the world, etc. But beyond the world, after all, it's some kind of connection to him because he's beyond the world. That's also a limitation. So that comes the third part. The truth is that God doesn't have any limitation at all. He's within limits. He's infinite and finite at the same time. I know it's a paradox. It doesn't make any sense. But God, that's the definition. It doesn't make any sense. It doesn't have to make sense. Anything that makes sense, even to us, already has a limit. The limit of how we define this thing that makes sense. God doesn't have any limits at all. At all. He's beyond limits and he is within limits at the same time. Complete paradox, of course. So that's the third, so to speak, idea of how everything in front of God is completely nothing. It's not that he's beyond things that we can say, yeah, he's beyond this and beyond that. Beyond is already a limitation. Surrounding something is already a limitation. Of course, every single level when you surround like a circle, every point of the circle is the same distance to the center of the circle. It doesn't really matter which point. So the whole creation in front of this expression of God is the same. It doesn't make a difference whether you're talking about a mountain or you're talking about a human being. It's the same. Because they're all creations. And after all, God surrounds, so to speak, all his creation. In the previous level, how God fills the world, each creature, is different from the other one. A mountain is a mountain, and a human being is a human being, and an animal is an animal. And God gives the exact amount of life that this particular creature needs to function. But in the second level, no. Every single creature is exactly the same. God surrounds and is above, so to speak, transcends every single creature. And he is within the creature at the same time. But then there's a third level. It's not transcendence. It's just nothing we can say about it. It's the wonder of godliness. This wonder of godliness is what takes a person when you really go step by step, first understanding and contemplating on how God fills the world, and then understanding and contemplating how God transcends the world, but still has a relationship with it. The relationship is transcendence. And then going deeper and higher, how God is even beyond transcendence. There's nothing we can say about him. Nothing you can positively say, nothing you can negatively negate from him. There's nothing you can say about him. And again, it's a great kindness of God that we can actually think about these ideas. Then you're going to reach a level, so to speak, a space in your life in which it doesn't really make any difference whatever happens to you or doesn't happen to you. Because you're just a tool of God. You yourself are an expression of godliness. Of course, when you're in the right path and you fulfill your commandments, etc., etc., it doesn't make a difference, whatever goes on. Everything is just the will of God. Everything is just, I'm here to fulfill whatever God wants from me in this particular situation. And he put me in this particular situation because he gave me the strength to do whatever I have to do in this particular situation. It doesn't really make a difference which situation it is. But that only... You can only reach that when you really realize by contemplating and by understanding that God not only fills the world, God not only transcends the world, but God is completely beyond anything I can even think about. Now, these are some ideas that I wanted to share about the idea of contemplating God. The main, I went back to the beginning. The main point of all of this is the one of the best moments to practice this is before prayer. And by practicing this, actually, a person can reach and understand fear of God, love of God, and really feel in front of God in the time of prayer. So when you actually proceed, you first think about these things, you first contemplate about these ideas,
and there are many more, of course, then you're going to really feel in front of God.
And that's the preparation for prayer. If you don't prepare yourself for prayer, you don't even feel talking to God. Who are you talking to? To the air? It doesn't make any sense. So you have to think, you have to contemplate, you have to meditate. There's a lot more to this, but... Okay, this is at least one point, one idea.